This episode of Fermented Adventure the Podcast is sponsored by Brewskits, handcrafted dog treats made from spent beer grains, oats, barley, and rye. No chemical preservatives, a great source of fiber, and packed with protein. Visit brewskits.com to see the full selection of treats for your dog and your cat. Receive 15% off, no minimum purchase, on your first order by typing in lowercase FA2024 at checkout. Cheers! Hello, ladies and gentlemen, craft spirit enthusiasts, and those interested in the intoxicating world of craft distilleries, cideries, meaderies, wineries, and the occasional foray into breweries. It's Rich Shane, and welcome to Fermented Adventure, the podcast, where we bring you the fascinating people that are making the mash, fermenting, distilling, bottling, pouring, and delivering to you some of the finest libations in the world. Before we get started, here are a few housekeeping items. Thank you for bringing the podcast into wherever you are and whatever you're doing. We truly are grateful that you have chosen to listen and make us part of your day. It would mean the world to us if you left a 5-star review. This helps us climb in the rankings, and it makes it easier for others to find us. Don't hesitate to leave us your comments as well. If the podcast didn't meet your expectations, tell us why. We're always striving to improve. You can find us at fermentedadventure.com. We are on Instagram and Facebook as Fermented Adventure. Email us at fermentedadventure@gmail.com. All right, FA Nation, let's meet our guests. He's Chris Littlewood. I'm Rich Shane. This is Fermented Adventure, the podcast. Chris, welcome to the podcast.
Welcome. I appreciate it. I appreciate you guys having me on today.
Chris, I am excited. Ever since we met at the Bottled in King of Prussia grand opening, and we had a little time to talk, I've been excited to get together with you and talk more whiskey, more bourbon. And today we're going to talk Bourbon of the Week. Chris, what is Bourbon of the Week?
Just the YouTube channel I started. It was right before COVID basically hit off here, and I decided I got a lot of time on my hands. It's time to do something. I love the whiskey scene, so I figured I might as well not only educate myself, but educate people who didn't know about it, because I did start not knowing about it myself, and decided weekly was a good time to drop a video. So that's how we started with Bourbon of the Week.
COVID comes around. How much before that had you been into bourbon or whiskey?
So not too much before that. I actually got into it personally because my now wife, my girlfriend at the time, her stepfather was real big into whiskey. And I would go over to his house and, you know, he would pour me up a glass of whiskey and I would sit there and pretend to enjoy it, obviously to impress him, to win the heart of my lovely wife now. And I would sip through it and I didn't love it. And then, you know, the fourth or the fifth time you finally sip something, you start to enjoy it a little bit more. And because of that, being forced into it and being like, yeah, this is actually something I truly enjoy at this point, It ended up me buying my own, getting my own, and then the collection side of things started to kick in. And that's when I really decided, you know, I want to learn about this, and what better way to learn about something than teaching yourself and teaching others along the way.
So do you remember any of those bourbons or whiskeys he was pouring for you?
He's a big old granddad and Basil Hayden's fan. So.
With all that education and all that experience, talk about the beginnings for you. I know you said you started collecting, but how was it for you to start the education process? Because I meet quite a few people now, and you start that overall, I don't know much about whiskey, I don't know much about bourbon. And I think for you, being in that space, and you know, for me, your experience as to where to start, talk about just how that kind of began rolling for you.
Yeah, so I think it's kind of overwhelming when you first get started in the game, because there's so much that you can learn. You can learn about specific distilleries. You can learn about history. You can learn about bottles in general. You can learn so much, where when I started, I was just kind of trying to learn what my palate liked and finding out, hey, this whiskey sipped a little bit better than this whiskey. Why did that happen? So I was real interested in, you know, how does this mash bill affect this flavor profile? And how does this proof work with this particular mash bill? And how does this distillery obtain this flavor profile when another distillery is using a very similar mash bill and gets a very different flavor profile? So I kind of went into the process of distilling rather than something like the history. And I used a lot of YouTube. I used a lot of, you know, there's a lot of great websites out there that have so much information on this. That's kind of where I started, and going in and listening to the people that actually know more about it than I ever did at the time. Now I feel like I at least have enough of a grasp of it that when people do come to me, they can be like, hey, you know, I'm getting this particular flavor profile. Are you getting that? And while I may or may not, I can at least explain to them why that they're getting that, or why I believe that they're getting it.
Brewskits, beer, grain, dog bones, brewskits. Your dog will go wild. Brewskits, beer, grain, dog bones, a healthy alternative for your pup.
Brewskits are all natural and made in the USA. Visit brewskit.com. That's BREWSCUID.com.
That experience and the way you began, were you visiting other distilleries besides checking out YouTube or blogs? Did you get out and just immerse yourself in to see the distilling process?
So unfortunately, I didn't. As I mentioned, we got right in COVID was when I kind of like blew up into my, hey, I'm going to go on head on at this thing and really learn and dive into it. And so I had the plan. I had the trip planned out. I had everything ready to go. COVID hit. They kind of shut it all down. It was, you know, very small tours and you couldn't get flights and nothing was cheap at the time. So I put it off. Me and my wife, God bless her, we had our first daughter. So by the time it was the next summer came around, she's pregnant. The next summer after that, I have a newborn. It was just a lot of, you know, bad timing when it came to actually getting out and visiting distilleries that I truly wanted to visit. Since then, I have visited a few distilleries, which has been awesome. I visited Sagamore down in Maryland. I visited a couple local distilleries here in Pennsylvania, including one over in Phoenixville, Bluebird Distillery. So it's been nice to get at least a few interesting people that I can meet and talk about from the professional side of things rather than just the YouTube side.
I'm curious, what was that first, what was that whole tour? What was the tour you had planned out?
So we didn't have the specifics down. I think we were ending it. We were going to end up doing Louisville, like a boys trip out to Louisville. It was half bachelor party, half not. We already did the bachelor party, but again, we didn't get to do the bachelor party the way we really wanted to. So we wanted to go through and try and do something a little bit bigger and better. So I think we were going to hit Louisville and kind of check out the distilleries over there, check out Old Forester, which has always been one of my favorites, and some of those distilleries out that way.
Pardon the interruption. Thank you so much for listening to Fermented Adventure, the podcast. Could you do us a favor? Hit that follow button. It makes it easier for others to find us, and it helps us climb in the rankings. Take a screenshot of the podcast, post it, tag us, and let everyone know that you listen to the Fermented Adventure podcast. Now, back to our podcast. Essentially, in 4 years, from what I see behind you, you've amassed a very reputable collection back there. How have you gone about obtaining the bourbons and whiskeys that you've added to your collection?
So that's a great question. And I think this doesn't really get talked about enough. If you go on and you ask, you know, you watch YouTube videos and all these things, and it's how did you get that bottle and who did you talk to and who did you shake hands with? And it does become down to a lot of building relationships. But I feel like the one thing that people talk about when building relationships is always, oh, I know the guy that owns the liquor store down the street. And that's the relationship that they're building. The relationship that I've built and the reason that I love what I do with Bourbon of the Week is I've built more of a community. So I have a Discord. I have a Discord that we all chat and I have a patron that we all hang out with, And these are the connections where the guy that lives in Texas that has access to that distillery down there for a distillery only release now has an opportunity to go buy a bottle that I would never have access to. So while I don't know that person myself when it comes to the owner of the store or anything like that, I still have a connection with somebody who does. And they're the people that are really, one, bringing me the knowledge of, hey, I tried this last year and this is a banger release. You want to try it? You want to get your hands on it? And that's something that I love is it's not just, I don't know just one or two people that are getting me these bottles. I have bottles on my shelf from all over, from all types of people and all types of groups, whether it's YouTube friends that I have who are also within the YouTube space, or it's, like I mentioned, Discord or patron members who are just telling me about bottles that I, again, would have never heard of otherwise.
Have you been put on a restriction or any kind of limitations on your procurement at this point, or it's all hand everything for themselves?
Is that a by the wife? Is that a by the wife thing, or is that an I by anybody at all?
It's self-imposed, or I don't know.
I definitely do try to stick to a budget. It becomes difficult at times because at this point, I'm sure you know as well as I do, everything seems to be that one-off special release that people are looking for. So it's not like back in the day when I feel like I first got started and I would walk into the liquor store and I would just walk by and say, you know, I haven't tried that bottle yet. Let me try that. But if I didn't pick it up that day, it was there the next week. It was there the week after that. Now it's, hey, 1,800 bottles are dropping nationwide and there's 13 in your state. If you don't pick it up when you pick it up, you're going to miss out on it, which sometimes you miss out on things and that happens. But I do, not very well, but I do try to stick to a budget, obviously.
It's hard, and we've talked about this often when we talk with distilleries, ones that we enjoy what they produce. When you see on social media that, all right, on Friday, you know, we just dumped the barrel, and on Friday, this is going to get released, and all right, it's only 125 bottles, and there's this huge, I almost get this like resentment feeling.
Yep.
That you're there, I'm here, and I can't get that, and I really would have loved to have tried that, which is one of the reasons why I'm a big fan of what Bottled is doing with the try before you buy model, that if something comes in and you haven't had it, you're not spending $50, $60, $80, over $100 on a bottle. You can see if you like it, and then you can take it home with you if you really do.
Yeah, Bottled definitely is something. I mean, we met there, as you mentioned, and Bottled is one of those things here in Pennsylvania that never would have even crossed my mind as an opportunity. But what they're doing over there with, one, being able to work with smaller distilleries, because at this point in the game, you've tried most of the big distillery stuff. Now, whether you like their flavor profile or not, they're going to put out their special releases. I'm kind of looking forward to the future of this thing, of these smaller, younger distilleries now having some stockpile with 5, 6, 7-year-old whiskey out there that's starting to get some age behind it and becoming some really good product that, again, I wouldn't have the opportunity to get without a place like Bottled. Just as I mentioned before, without a person at that distillery or near that distillery, I wouldn't have an opportunity to try. So they're doing some special things at Bottled for sure.
Chris, talk about the early days of Bourbon of the Week. Talk about the launch and just some of those experiences that you had.
So I will say, please do not go back and watch some of my original videos. When I first got into this, whiskey was obviously the passion behind it, but editing was always something that I wanted to get into, the Premiere Pro type styles of things, just learning that. And then whiskey was kind of one of those things that I at least had enough knowledge about where if I'm going to make a video, I might as well do it about something that I enjoy. So it definitely started because of the bourbon, but editing and learning the Premiere Pro side of things was the fun thing for me as well. But I started out, everybody starts out with, you know, the bad microphone and the camera that looks like crap and they don't know any of their settings. And my screen was stretch screen. And we started out with a video a week. It was actually me and my buddy were just talking in a group chat one day saying, and he's sitting there like, listen, you got all this whiskey, you're drinking it anyway. Why don't you put out a video like I'm interested on your opinion on it rather than just messaging me what you think about it. Put out a video. I'll watch the video. So, you know, YouTube grows very slowly. It's something that you kind of have to be prepared for going into it. But the quality of my videos definitely did not help at the beginning. So it was a learning process. And I think the growing within that industry of it as well, within YouTube as well, has been something that has helped me in the community for myself.
Talk about some of the surprises along the way.
So I would say one of the biggest surprises would be the number of people that are willing to help within the community. I feel like when I first got started, I didn't know anybody. So, you know, I'm out there reaching out to friends that I already have who were like, hey, I saw you started this up. Who also lived in Pennsylvania. So we had access to the same things and maybe they had a little bit more knowledge than me. I actually had a friend when I first started who gave me a Weller Foolproof. And if anybody knows anything about Weller Foolproof, they're not easy to come by. And at the time, I'm just sitting here thinking to myself like, oh, another bottle of whiskey. I didn't really know what I had my hands on at the time. But then looking back on it, it's just like, without these people, without these other people that are willing to help me along the way, obtaining bottles, video ideas, I think that's another thing that people overlook. And I'm sure you know within, you know, doing the podcast, of what's the next big idea? Who's the next guest that I want to have on? What's the next topic that I really want to talk about? I think that's one of the harder things as far as content creation in general. And then again, the algorithms want you to be available 24/7. And it's definitely not something that I'm interested in being 24/7. But at the same time, if you want to keep growing in this space, you do have to be available for, you know, commenting on things, putting out videos as often as you can. And I don't mind doing it. It's just some of the grunt work that I wasn't expecting at the very beginning of things.
I've always said, and I don't know how you feel about it, but when this is no longer fun, when it's just, it's not looking forward to a podcast. It's like, oh, another podcast. And it seems like after, for us, we're in our fifth year now, the enjoyment is certainly there. And the people that you find that now you bring into your atmosphere, you know, you find even more conversations, more fun about it. And with you, are there people that you would like to meet or talk to that you haven't yet, or other ideas, as you said, for your show that you'd like to bring on and expand to?
So I think you already mentioned it before, is just kind of meeting the people within the industry that have the, I've started out with obviously learning about my palate and what's enjoyable for me and the whiskey making side of things, but I'm starting to move into the history side of things. I have a bunch of other friends that have just taken a trip down to Louisville themselves, and they got to talk to, you know, the Jimmy and Eddie Russells of the world and the people within the industry that just have this history and knowledge, where there's so much, part of my French, there's so much BS out there with how many people say you have to drink whiskey this way, or whiskey's only to be enjoyed this way. And then you see a video of Jimmy Russell going out there saying he'll drink, you know, the best stuff he has in his warehouse with a Diet Coke or with a Coke, or, you know, it's all about enjoying it and not how you're enjoying it. So I think it's just one of those things where I want to talk to those type of people in the industry, one, before they're gone, before it's too soon or before it's too late, but two, to really get a knowledge of like how deep this goes into the history side of things and how they got their start and how they're seeing the future of whiskey, because if anybody's going to know better, it's going to be them.
You talked about in the beginning meeting your father-in-law, not at the time, but to be, and he was sharing whiskeys with you. I find that very fascinating of an insight, that that was something he wanted to share with you. Did you ever ask or ever get some insight as to what, was that just his thing, or was that a way of kind of introducing you to something that he had a passion to?
I think a little bit of both. It was definitely his thing before I met her, because I showed up and he had the barrel, you know, the half barrel shelves in the corner, and he's got, you know, 40 or 50 different bottles. And you could tell he's the type of guy where every Christmas somebody is just bringing him another bottle of whiskey, and it, you know, he tries it and it sits on the shelf. And now he's old school. He found what he likes. He found what he's enjoyed. So he, you know, he tries it, he gives his opinion on it, and then it sits in the back of the shelf and he grabs his Basils or his old granddad. But at the same time, I think he was kind of proud of what he had of like, hey, if you're going to get into this whiskey thing, there's no better place to start than here. And I think without that, I wouldn't have had an opportunity to really dive into this, because it is an expensive hobby to be in, whether we like it or not. He had 40 or 50 bottles on his shelf right there that I could go in and try, no questions asked, without having to buy the bottle, which I think is something that's very important. It's you talked about it with bottled. Try before you buy when bottles are $75, $85, $90. Going into your local whiskey bar or something that has a bunch of bottles on the shelf, that he was my local whiskey bar where I could go in, try anything I wanted. And he knew about it. You know, he knew the ins and outs of where this bottle was from and why he doesn't like sour mashes and why he likes this particular bottle. And without that knowledge and without being able to obtain some of those drinks before I had to go out and actually purchase them, I don't think I would have continued what I was doing.
In your own self-discovery, do you think that you educated your palate, or your palate always had that there? It just needed to be prodded and woken up.
Definitely the first of those. I might have had one of the worst palates I could, until I never would have realized until I got deep into this thing. It was one of those things where I do a segment now where my wife picks out three bottles of whiskey. She puts them on myself without me knowing. She pours one of them. When I first got started, I didn't have a clue. You could have had a rye up there, a double oaked bourbon, and a Scotch whiskey, and I would have been like, I don't know which one this is. But it's gotten to the point now where I'm not 100% on it, but I can at least distinguish between some certain characteristics on it. And it's only from time and time again of drinking, you know, drinking a Wild Turkey glass, going out there and truly honing in on the notes of what Wild Turkey has to offer, and then drinking Old Forester and drinking it multiple nights in a row where you can truly hone in on those types of flavor profiles before you're ever going to pick up on it. And I think that's something that kind of disparages people from getting into this, is they pick up a glass of whiskey and they're like, oh, that's too hot, I'm never gonna like this, or oh, that doesn't taste anything different than that other glass that you just gave me, who cares. But it's one of those things where I definitely educated my palate, and because of being able to actually pick up on it eventually, it made it more fun for me, where I can now be like, this is why I like this, this is why I don't like this. And it might be a good glass of whiskey for you and not for me, but I can at least tell you why I don't enjoy it, even if it's a good glass of whiskey.
You brought up a great point there. And I think one of the things to emphasize is time, that you read, you watched, you listened, you tasted. And I think it's time that you educate your palate. It's listening to other people and what they have to say. I have gotten the most knowledge from that as far as how to taste whiskey, taste bourbon, taking the different classes and things, just to have that experience from somebody else. But you just don't go and sit down and find the nuances unless you have a super
sensitive, well-educated palate. And there are those in, let's say, the food industry, or there are those that do have that palate. But I think it's time. I think you have to understand the time factor.
Yeah, time is definitely very important when it comes to it. When it comes to working your way up from the 80 proofs all the way up to being able to handle something that's 130, 135 proof, you can't just sit down and sip on 135 proof whiskey and really pick out the flavor profiles. You got to work your way through the 80s, through the 90s, through the 100s until something like 130 becomes palatable to be able to work past an ethanol kick. And I agree with you. There's people out there, I'll be sipping a glass of whiskey, and then I'll go, I like to do it on my own, and then I'll go watch reviews and see what other people are, what the flavors that I'm supposed to be getting, what other people are getting with better palates than me. And the second they say, so, you know, I get raspberries off the front of this, then immediately it kicks in, you take a sip and you're like, there it is. That's exactly what we were talking about. I couldn't put my finger on it. I couldn't quite put my tongue on it, but there is a raspberry presence in this that I just wasn't thinking about before until I heard the word, until somebody told me that I should be tasting.
You know, it resonated with me just recently. We had the Inn at Grace Winery on the podcast. They're a local winery in Delaware County. And listening to some of the fruits and things, and I had this other these conversations with distillers too, but it's very fresh on my mind that there are fruits and things that will be listed on a bottle or on a tasting note sheet that fruits and things I've never tasted before.
Yep.
And I'm like, how am I supposed to pick that out if I've never had it or I haven't had it in a while? There were notes of kiwi. I can't remember the last time I had a kiwi. I remember the tartness, maybe the sweetness, the characteristics, but there's some wild things out there. Somebody will say a chokeberry or I don't know, right?
So many, you know, stone fruit. I think my kiwi was apricot. I saw one with apricot on there and I was like, I haven't ever had an apricot in my entire life that I can think of off my head. How am I supposed to know an apricot?
All right, stone fruit is my pet peeve.
I mean, I don't know if I know what it is to this day.
What is in my understanding, a stone fruit is a peach, a plum, something with that pit in it, and people can write you or write me and say, no, this is exactly what it is, because I've never seen stone fruit at the grocery store or my local produce stand.
I'm still looking for it. But yeah, I'm under the understanding that it's the same thing that you had just mentioned. But whenever somebody writes that note or gets that note, I'm looking for peaches, plums, or something like that. And sometimes I feel like maybe I'm getting it, but when I see stone fruit, I'm just like, you got to be a little bit more specific for me here.
To your point there, you said apricot, or somebody would say apricot. Now, is it a dried apricot? Is it a fresh apricot? You know, I mean, that's where you get down to the nitty gritty.
Yep.
Because there are going to be different flavor profiles to just that one fruit or what would come out of that bourbon or whiskey.
Right. And which part, like what specifically about the apricot? Is it a bitterness? Is it a sugariness of the apricot? Like what exactly about the, and again, I mean, it's like a peach from my understanding. So I can at least say, hey, I've had a peach before, but at the same time, it just, some of the flavor profiles that I read do get a little outlandish and I try my best to pick them up, but.
Your energy, your enthusiasm, your focus is very infectious. And watching your program, I mean, talk to people if they haven't seen it yet, what they can expect from a Bourbon of the Week.
So I think the one thing that with YouTube in general, you always try at least do something to stand out. You know, you get a bottle out there and it's got 150 reviews on it. So why watch Bourbon of the Week over somebody else? And I'm not telling you that I'm better than anybody else. I'm just telling you, there is a difference between what I like to do. I like, since the beginning, I use three different criteria, and I think it still hones in on somebody that's newer to bourbon, when at the same, or somebody who's kind of educated and knows enough about whiskey to follow along, because I use price, taste, and drinkability. And I think those are three factors that anybody within the whiskey world can kind of appreciate. Drinkability being how much ethanol kick is there compared to the proof on it, because if you've got a 90 proof whiskey that drinks super hot, then it might not be enjoyable to somebody. But if you have something that's somebody that's working their way through the ranks of, like I mentioned before, 80 proof, 90 proof, 100 proof, and I now tell you this 110 proof whiskey tastes more like a 95 to 100 to me, and you're like, okay, well, I can tolerate 100, but I never thought about picking up 110. Well, now you know my drinkability on that is a good drinkability score. Taste on it, obviously, I'm going to go through the tasting notes, what the tasting notes that I'm getting are, and if it's an enjoyable tasting experience for me. The tough part about that with anything when it comes to taste is some people like a certain flavor profile, some people don't. So I'm always giving you my personal preference on things. So Some people like a port finish. I'm not a big wine guy. I found a few that I enjoy. I find some that I don't. It's just the way that it happens to be when it comes to taste. It's so subjective. And then price. What's the value that you're getting for a bourbon? Is it, you know, an 80 proof bourbon that's $95? Does that really make sense when it comes to the whiskey world? Are there other comparables out there that you can think of where, hey, this bottle tastes just as good and drinks just as easy, but it's $30 less? Maybe you can try this and this one instead because they're a similar flavor profile. So price, taste, and drinkability are the three things that I like to do. And then I always like to educate myself. So I do the Bourbon Bomb of the Week during my regular Wednesday reviews where I go in, I learn something myself, whether it's about the bottle, whether it's about the distillery, whether about the town that it's distilled in. And then I educate you guys on that as well. So I learn it and then I, you know, regurgitate that information that I've learned to the viewer. And that way they can learn something in the video as well.
You spoke about value, you know, price and value. And as you've amassed your experience and your education, do you find that value is harder and harder to come by?
I think it is in the sense that I don't believe that people are drinking, quote unquote, in what we call daily drinkers anymore, where you would go out and you would buy, you know, your Wild Turkey 101, and that would be your daily drinker. When you wanted to pour a glass of whiskey, you were pouring up Wild Turkey 101. I don't remember the last time that I went to the store and specifically like was going there to look for Wild Turkey 101 or a daily shelf whiskey. Because again, with all these special releases that are coming out, they're $150, $200, $250 because again, there's only 1,400 bottles going out nationwide. So it's hard to put a value. People will say, I'll never pay over this amount for it. And then all of a sudden you see it for $10 less. Well, if your cutoff was 200 and it's 190, are you still picking it up because it's under your value? So I think it is hard to find value these days because everything seems to be a special release. I think there's still great value in great bourbon that is on the shelf. It just seems like the people that are doing the whiskey drinking these days are also trying to do whiskey collecting these days. And it seems like you can't get the value coming along with the collection.
You know, you brought up a great point there as far as a daily drinker. And there are things where I could say, you know, this would be something I could drink more often or have more of because maybe it's a lower proof or it doesn't have that ethanol kick that just allows me to enjoy a pour. But for me and those other collectors, and I wouldn't even consider myself a collector. I just enjoy it. But there's so many on the shelves. So it's not like I'm going to say that's going to be my go-to bottle on a Tuesday and a Wednesday and a Thursday or what have you. So I think that makes it more difficult as well. So I wonder, how does it become or how does brand awareness or brand loyalty come into effect, do you think, with these distilleries?
I think brand loyalty is a huge thing when it comes to the distillery, especially on the special release side of things. And I think some distilleries are doing better than others as far as if you're willing to put out a bottle at $200, then it needs to be a very good bottle. And if you've already loved a distillery such as like Wild Turkey and you're following along in like their Master's Keep collection, which is their high-end ultra premium aged stuff that's coming out at that $150, $175, $200 mark. The problem becomes if you start putting out bottles like that and they start to fall off of what they're supposed to be, what the recognition of how great those bottles are supposed to be, then you start to lose that. Okay, I bought it twice. It's not good. I'm not spending it. And I've been personally affected by this where I've spent $200 on bottles, and I didn't like it the first time. And they do releases on these bottles annually, and I'm out on them. You know, once I tried it once, if it's not for me, I'm not going to go back through. And, you know, maybe you find one once in a while where you watch a review and somebody will finally tell you, hey, this is better than it used to be. They're back on track. But then they go back and you're back to trying the next release again. And you're kind of up in the air on it. So the question becomes, what kind of risk versus reward do you want to run with a distillery that maybe you don't like in the first place, or maybe you didn't enjoy a particular release from them? So is $150 a risk that you're willing to take on a bottle that you don't know if you're going to love? Or are you going to spend $150 on a bottle that you know from a distillery that you've tried over and over again and it's hit all the marks for?
When your program or in your life experience, have you done something where you cracked open a bottle, you tried it, you didn't like it, and then have you gone back to that same bottle and tried it and reviewed it again?
I have. I've done a few bottles where I've revisited. Nothing specifically from bottle to bottle that's really gone from, hey, I don't enjoy this at all to something that I truly loved or thought knocked my socks off. There have been a few bottles that I think got better One distillery in general, though, when Elijah Craig, when I first tried Elijah Craig as a company, I didn't truly enjoy Elijah Craig when I first got started into things. I put them all, I wrote them off. You know, I drank the Elijah Craig, I drank the Toasted, I tried a couple of their barrel proof batches, and it just wasn't for me. Everybody was telling me I was wrong, which again, it's subjective. So I can take it. If you don't think I'm right, I'm more than willing to let you tell me about it. But it was just not for me. And I feel like everybody has one until it was like Elijah Craig B522 or something, B521, when something just hit me on it. And I was like, this one I actually enjoy. And going forward from there, I can't afford every batch of Elijah Craig barrel proof that comes out a year. But going forward from there, I was finally willing to able to give them a try again. And I, to this day, enjoy Elijah Craig barrel proofs when I didn't enjoy them before.
It's Chris's birthday, or Chris's birthday is coming up, and I don't know when that is, but somebody wants to get you a bottle of something. What flavor profile should they be looking out for you for?
As far as like a specific distillery or flavor profile?
What do you gravitate towards? Spicy, towards oaky, towards sweet, towards...
I'm definitely, when it comes to my bourbons, I'm definitely a sweet guy. I don't mind having a spice note in there, as long as the spice is either followed or started with some type of sweet. I never really had, I always had a sweet tooth when I was younger. Now when I'm older, I don't really, you know, I'm not eating the sweets as much. But with my whiskey, for some reason, I do still love a sweet whiskey. I'm not a big finished guy. I've tried a few finishes that I do truly enjoy, but as an overall experience, I would stay away from finishes myself. And then I'm not a big fan of something that's super aged. I know age is always a question of, is it older? Is it better? And for me, it's not always that way. I find myself in that 12 years at this point is kind of an older age statement, but I don't even mind the 8 to 10 year mark. I think 12 years is like if I had to pick an actual year age statement, I would go 12 years. So something sweet, something with a little bit of age behind it, but not too oaky, not too dry, and nothing that's fresh.
All right. And when is your actual birthday so people can start collecting now for you?
In September. Feel free to send those my way in September.
Okay. Have you ventured into the secondary market yet?
So I have not, in the sense that I've done a few things on secondary, nothing straight up paying for secondary. I ended up buying a second bottle. I ended up getting two bottles of a Wild Turkey Master's Keep, and I didn't enjoy the first one that I had. So I did trade that off on the secondary market, but it was a stag for a Wild Turkey Master's Keep. It was the Voyage specifically. So I did a one-for-one trade on something like that, but I haven't paid. And that's another thing that I try not to do. I try not to overpay for bottles that I don't need to. If I miss out on a bottle, I miss out on a bottle. If I can get it at MSRP, I'm probably going to grab it just because of the YouTube channel. But other than that, I don't have the budget for it. And two, it just bothers me when I see some of the prices above MSRP that these bottles come in at.
Well, hopefully some of the affiliate work that you've been doing helps to take off some of that high-end budget that you need to work with. Talk about some of the affiliates you're working with and some of the promotional products that you have available.
So right now we have done a few just with other groups. We've done a few bottle picks. Right now we have a Hard Truth pick that's out. If you go on sharedpour.com, it should be right there on their front page. So us and Hard Truth got together and did a rye pick, and that is a phenomenal pick. And then other than that, we did just do a promotion with Infused Barware. They have beautiful barware sets. They did a baseball one. They have a golf one. If you're a golf fan, a baseball fan, we just gave one of those away on the channel. I mean, it's gorgeous. It's got a baseball bat as the decanter. It's got a wooden base path with four plates and everything like that that you can sit your four glasses on. And it's a gorgeous set. So Infused Barware. And then again, check out Sharon Ford for that rye mash bill when it comes to the Hard Truth pick.
So what are you drinking tonight? What are you drinking on the podcast with us?
Tonight, we actually have another bottle that was just sent to me.
Oh, the Pennsyltucky.
The Pennsyltucky. Have you tried it?
I haven't had that yet, but we've been talking to the distillery about having them out. And talk about what you have there, because I don't want to go too far, because you're bourbon of the week. Do your thing, man.
That's true. Now, this is you just asked me what my favorite flavor profile is, and this does not meet any of those standards. So this is a port finished 5-grain bourbon. It comes in at 53% corn, 23% wheat, 12% barley, 6% rye, and 6% oats. And I talked about education before and how interesting it mash bills are to me. And this is something that I've never experienced before. First of all, oats isn't something you typically pick up on a mash bill. And then I had to go through and learn, you know, what does oats add to a flavor profile? And apparently it gives you some chocolate notes, some coconut notes, some flavor profiles like that, some mocha notes, things like that. And then when malted barley is usually on most mash bills, like a 4%, maybe a 5%. So for this to have 12% malted barley, you pick up on almost more of an aged process note, some toastiness with this when it comes to the malted barley, some nutty flavors when it comes to that. So that mash bill with that chocolatey, that nutty mixed with that port finish does give me something that I truly thought I was not going to enjoy at all. And I hate when companies send me bottles because I always have to tell them, listen, if I don't like it, I'm going to tell people I'm not going to like it. But if you're willing to still send it to me, I'm willing to try it. And this was something that going into it, I was like, I'm just not going to like it. Surprised me a lot. A very good bottle of whiskey. This is a Cash Frank single barrel, 122.8 proof. So if you're in the Pennsylvania, the Harrisburg area, I would definitely recommend stopping by and trying it out.
It's fun when you see what is happening in craft. And you touched upon it a little bit because where we are in Pennsylvania, we're now experiencing distilleries that have a 5 and 6 year age statement. These barrels have been laying down, they've been laying these down these barrels for 5 and 6 years. And this is exciting times for craft and Pennsylvania distilling. Mid-State Distillery, which you have right there, they started out and we went very early on and they have a wall of vodka infusions. And they'll put anything in a vodka that just to kind of give it some sort of flavor. And they were really delicious. It was a lot of fun. They had one of the best Bloody Mary bars I've ever seen. So to see what they're doing now and coming of age with their whiskeys, that makes it as a consumer and as what you're doing. And like you said, wow, I looked at the label. You didn't expect to even want to like that, did you?
Nope, I did not expect to. It was right on the thing of me saying to myself, like when they sent over what it was, I was like, do I even bother trying it? But I'm willing to be honest with them if they're willing to be honest with me. And I like, one, the transparency. We haven't touched on anything with transparency tonight, but I think that's one way that you can keep your clientele excited about what you're doing is by being transparent about what you have. I think for a while there, we got into some distilleries putting out some product that was sourced, which isn't a problem for me at all, but only if you're not going to try and pass it off as your own product. If you're going to try and hide the fact that it's sourced, that's a different conversation for another day. But they're very transparent at what they're doing over here at Mid-State. They were very open to me trying it. They were very open to me giving it a bad review, which is what I straight up tell them in the email back. Hey, if I don't like it, I'm not going to sit here and tell nobody to buy it. I'm going to tell them that it's not a preference for me. I'm going to tell them the flavor profile that I get. But again, I was happily surprised that I did enjoy this one right here.
And now you're promoting on several platforms.
Now we're promoting it. That's right. And Pennsylvania in general, you mentioned coming of age basically with some of their whiskey age statements. And it's exciting for Pennsylvania in general because we have such a rich history with whiskey already that I don't think people know about as much with the Whiskey Rebellion and things like that, that I think there's so much opportunity here in Pennsylvania to really grow on something if we can get a good, you know, some good products coming out of Pennsylvania. Now, obviously, you'll never compete with anything like Kentucky, but there aren't a lot of other states out there that have multiple distilleries putting out multiple different releases that are as good as some of the ones coming out of Pennsylvania that I've tried.
See, now here's where the fun banter begins, Chris, because if you look at not necessarily bourbon, because you're right, Pennsylvania has a lot of, you know, ground to catch up on. But when you look at the rye whiskeys being produced in Pennsylvania, I would almost flip the script and say that Pennsylvania, if they already haven't established it, you will start to see even more credibility from those ryes that Kentucky will not be able to produce. And I think it just goes back to where they're sourcing their grain and the production quality and the value and the knowledge of these distillers here in Pennsylvania. They know what they're doing. And it's not bourbon producers making ryes. It's rye producers making ryes, and they also happen to make a bourbon. And that's just my take on it.
No, I agree with you 100% on that. Absolutely. I think it's something that is to be excited about here in Pennsylvania because it's one of those things where it's hard to travel, you know, all over every state, and you can hit Louisville and maybe you hit 5 or 6 distilleries, and you can go out to Texas and you can hit 2 or 3 distilleries, and you can go here and go there and there's a distillery around or two. But for us being in Pennsylvania, it'd be exciting to just, you know, a 4-hour drive, be able to go up the hopefully soon to be whiskey trail and hit all these distilleries that are producing some fantastic rye whiskeys. There's some great stuff out there already. And as you mentioned, as we get some older stock here, I think that with the knowledge that we have as Pennsylvania rye, and then all of the grains that we can source right here in Pennsylvania, it's going to be a very exciting future for rye here in Pennsylvania.
And then the other thing you said, I mean, what's happening now is just with the age of what's coming about, that's really when you no longer have to source. And that's my point. When you don't have to source anymore, because that generally wasn't for a lot of these distilleries, the business plan long term anyway. But then you find that they say, you know what? We have our fans that love this flavor profile. We're going to keep this source whiskey. We're going to blend it for what we have been doing. But now we have it alongside our own stuff. And
yeah,
that's just even more opportunity for us as a consumer.
No, I agree. I think a lot of companies that started out in that sourcing era are the companies that are starting to come with some actual decent whiskey with age statements and stuff like that. And I was always curious about what the transition period is for a company like that. Are they going to eventually just, you know, get rid of that original source product? Are they going to blend it out? Is it going to be something where, hey, we're going to keep 80% of this original blend and put 20% of our own whiskey in and, you know, over the years start to change the profile? Or are they going to do like what you said, where they're going to stick with that product? Hey, this is a product we had. We're going to continue sourcing this as long as we can, as long as the price makes sense. But here's another product that we're putting out that's 100% our own distillate.
So what is the future? How does it look for Bourbon of the Week? What are some of the things, you know, your viewers can look forward to?
So I think the big thing for me is I love doing the reviews and I love doing everything like that. But I think the big thing is kind of building more of a building the community out more as far as, you know, not just Bourbon of the Week, but bringing everybody into a place where there's, you know, whether it be a Discord group or in the chats or in conversations, but putting together a space where everybody can kind of have their own spot. I feel like there's places out there where you can, you know, I'm in this particular group just to hit the secondary market. And I'm in this particular group just to talk about, you know, this particular brand. And I'm in this, I feel like there's got to be a place or a community spot where like everybody can come together for all different types of reasons. And then planning things. I think being at Bottled with you the other day, it was just, you looked around and it was like, these are all like-minded people. We're all enjoying whiskey together. We all have a different approach to how we got here, where we're going from here. And just being able to talk about it, bounce ideas off each other for either a podcast or a YouTube video, and not being the same mundane thing that I've been doing for the past 4 years of, okay, here's another. If it's not, you know, I can't go out and I can't review Old Forester 1910 anymore. There's 1,000 videos out there. Nobody wants to hear about 1910 anymore. Just as an example, I think Old Forester 1910 is a great whiskey. But it's just one of those things where if you're not putting out the newest release on the Elijah Craig Barrel Proof, or the newest release on what Wild Turkey's putting out, then you're not really keeping up with what people want to hear. So I think rather than just trying to keep up with the newest and latest model, going out and building a community, going out and doing events together and meeting new people within the industry would be an awesome.
You know, what you spoke about, I think, is even more fascinating now because we're still seeing the ripple effect of COVID. And we are now in that place where more and more people want to get together. We're not as much doing the Zoom calls. Not that they say they don't exist, but we want to commune. I mean, this is what alcohol and spirits was really supposed to be about. It's about community. It's about you sharing. I get stone fruit on the nose, Chris. Don't you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
right.
It's talking and it's reminiscing and saying, yeah, I was at that distillery, or my grandfather had this on the shelf, or whatever it is. And then 4 hours later, you had a great time. You realized you have this commonality, this bonding, or you welcome somebody new into the fold, like you and I have been, you know, like you talk about, that now this is an enjoyable experience versus being kind of lost in the woods.
Yeah, I agree. It's without having the community, without having the people that I can talk to every day about this kind of stuff, bounce ideas off of, and just kind of enjoy, sit back and enjoy, you know, once a month we hop on a Discord video call and we just sit there and we drink whiskey and we, you know, shoot the shit and we have some good times. So it's just one of those things where doing it like that is a lot of fun. So I like to be able to have the community there.
See, and this is what it's all about. It's us, you and me, just talking, getting to know each other better, introducing to more people to find out what Bourbon of the Week is all about. So how do people find Bourbon of the Week?
Bourbon of the Week, the main ways, Instagram. Obviously, all the handles are the same. Bourbon of the Week on Instagram, TikTok, YouTube, and I think that's it. Yeah, TikTok. It's TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube are my main three. So that's where you can find me. We do have a Discord group you can find in any of my links when it comes to that, and come chat with us on Discord. So those are what we page. And then we have a Patreon page as well, Bourbon of the Week on Patreon, if you want to support financially, which is always appreciated. We obviously take care of you as well. We send out some merch and stuff like that when you join. We have glasses, hoodies, all kinds of stuff like that. So check those all out. They're all in links you can find on Instagram.
Is there anything we haven't talked about today, Chris, that you want the listeners to know more about you or Bourbon of the Week?
I think we pretty much we touched on a lot of different subjects tonight, which, again, just that flow and that stream of consciousness when you're talking about something that you love. If you would have told me 4 years ago that I was going to sit here and talk for an hour on a podcast, I would have said, I don't have that much to talk about. But just be able to have that conversation and it flow so naturally was awesome. So I appreciate you having me on.
Well, I appreciate your time. I mean, we could have gone for another 3 hours because there's plenty of stuff behind you that we could have just poured into a glass and just talked to a little bit about. I'm grateful for your time tonight. Thanks for being a friend of Fermented Adventure. I know we're going to see each other more out and about. Maybe we'll start planning some trips together, come together with some ideas and bring that to the community, because I think the future of bourbon, of whiskey, of the things that are being produced is so exciting. And it's great to be a part of it and having you enjoy the Fermented Adventure with us.
Yeah, again, thanks for having me on. And this will not be the last time we talk. Like you said, I hope we can plan some trips together. And even if it's local, get out to some of these local places and try some good whiskey.
Awesome. Chris, thank you very much. Cheers.
Cheers.